definition you have, I think you call it meaningfulness.
Yes, that's right.
I actually like that definition or that way of saying it should be basically the name of the territory or a recognizable form of the name of the territory. And if you didn't just indicate up front that that's what the string should be, and if it's controversial, that's all taking place with the initial request to be in the fast track. So.
So how would you deal with the that's fine. And how would you deal with the circumstance where the possible circumstance where you have a territory that is applying for something that, or is putting forward a string that by its own assessment, is acceptable, but everyone knows it's not really a meaningful designation of the territory, but happens to be, just to use an example, a meaningful denotation of the name of the president.
Is that likely to happen?
Well, I don't know. I'm asking the question on the basis that we've got a situation here where we have a fast-track approach where we've got to be careful not to impinge on policy, and what we end up with is a circumstance where we are effectively allowing, if we don't have any form of confirmation, then we are effectively, as a bottom line, allowing any territory to choose anything. Because even though you have a policy in place that says it should be meaningful and it should be denoting the name of the territory, it's not a treaty and it's not a resolution passed by the United Nations. It is a policy that's been, that will have, or not, it is a rule, if you like, for the fast track that will have been put in place by a group of people. And if a territory decides that something is meaningful to them, but it's not meaningful within the confines of the rules that we've said, surely there has to be some mechanism for checking that. I'm not suggesting, by the way, before I let you respond, I'm not suggesting that the language committee should be able to say no. But I think we're talking about as a circumstance, and obviously this isn't said yet, but it's a circumstance where if there was any question or there was a problem, then you'd expect some discussion to take place. In much the same way as currently discussion takes place with IANA, if there seems to be a lack of clarity around whether there is to take an example, local internet community buying for the choice of a CCTLD manager.
Chris, this is Ram. If you could put me in the queue.
Yeah, I will. Heather, do you have a response to that? Or?
Well, I would just add that there's a difference in my mind between the committee saying no and there being a discussion about it. There's a world of difference between those.
If we were to say that the committee's, if we were to be specific and say that short form name and long form name listed on those tables is a given and clearly acceptable, and that the committee's job would be to merely to confirm that any other suggested string does in fact meaningfully denote the territory. And in the case that there is some question about that, it's a matter for discussion. Is that more acceptable?
I think it's a possible point of discussion. I wouldn't want to say yes or no.
No, I understand. I know I'm never going to get you to say yes. Ram. Ram, did you have something?
Yes, thank you. This is Ram. I wanted to add two things. One is, you know, you were talking about short form, long form as a possibility, as an example. But there's also some discussion about what the committee would be ruling on, for instance, what this language committee would be ruling on. And I want to reiterate as strongly as possible, fact that the controversies would happen, there is a clear likelihood of the controversies happening both within and across territories. For example, in the Arabic script, there are characters that are not visible to the human eye, but that are acceptable in the language. And, you could have a situation where a language committee that is duly constituted and that has several experts in it deadlocks because both forms or multiple forms of the same representation are valid. They sound the same, they look the same, but with Unicode underneath, they're not the same. So I suggest extreme caution with A, engaging a language committee, and B, giving the language committee the role of saying no or saying yes, because the danger you run is that they deadlock and the entire fast track becomes,
So what's the alternative then?
I'm not sure I have the answers. What I do see is a problem with charging a language committee with saying a yes or a no, because things like Unicode and the linguistic pieces underneath it, completely qualified linguists will disagree and will go to the grave disagreeing.
Sorry. I understand what you're saying, but I think we're actually mixing two things up here. It's not said, and it hasn't been said, and it's certainly not intended, and if it's been understood, then my apologies for it, because it wasn't intended to be, that this committee will be ruling on anything. The job of this committee, if it exists, would be to confirm one thing, effectively, which is that the string in the language is meaningful, in the sense that it is either the name of the territory or it denotes the territory. It's got nothing to do with Unicode. It's got nothing to do with what it translates into. It is purely, is the word or the string Emirati, to pick one example, does that meaningfully denote the name of the territory, the United Arab Emirates? Does the string in Arabic, Saudi, meaningfully denote Saudi Arabia? That's it. Anything to do with anything else, to do with Unicode, code points and stuff like that, is nothing whatsoever to do with this linguistic committee.
Chris, let me swiftly jump in and say, you can say this, but that is not the case, that is not the truth, because if you say Emirati in the Arabic language, it uses a script that is also used in another language, and the language committee is not going to be ruling on the Arabic language, it's going to be ruling on the script. And we can't wish it away. We can't just say it's got nothing whatsoever to do with the underlying Unicode, because that actually, I think, has everything to do with the Unicode.
Why?
Can Gary answer that question?
Whoever wants to answer the question.
Yes, because the string Saudi has to be represented in a way that is meaningful to a computer, and because there may be multiple ways to do that to a computer. Saudi probably isn't one of them, but there will be strings that, as they appear scrawled on paper, are absolutely unambiguous, will not be unambiguous when the decision needs to be made about the computerized representation of these strings. And who makes that decision then? I mean, as Ram says, it's easy enough to say that the language committee won't be doing this, but it has to be done, so who then will?
Well, my understanding from the discussions that we had had up until now, and certainly from the discussion, the lengthy discussions that we'd had with Patrick and various other people, was that it working technically and it working from a Unicode point of view is a matter that would be dealt with by what we've designated as the technical committee. That's why there are two specific committees. The technical, and there's not been any feedback from anybody at all to suggest that anyone has a problem with a technical committee saying this won't work from a technical point of view. The challenge has been from governments, mainly from governments, and I understand this completely, that they say they should have the right to choose the string. We say, yes, subject to confirmation for the moment that it actually denotes the territory, because until we've completed the full-blown IDN CCTLD policy, we don't know what the rules are going to be for whether you can have something that does or does not denote the territory.
How is that string to be submitted? In what form is it to be submitted? As a line in an email message, in which case the Unicoding decision is made and accessible?
I have absolutely no idea at this stage.
Chris, the problem that you're saying the technical community will resolve. Actually, what happens is the technical committee comes back and says, give us the Unicode string that is going to be represented. We will run it through the necessary checks, and we will ensure that it will work unambiguously and correctly.
Yes.
That's what the technical committee is going to come back. And they're going to come back and say, for this string, here are three other strings that look similar or that actually have been defined by linguists to be similar, and we will block all of them. They can do that. However, what comes in to the technical committee is a Unicode string. It's not. So I think you can't just say it's got nothing to do with Unicode.
I'm not saying this has got everything to do with Unicode. What I'm talking about is specifically one thing, which is a committee of linguists to look at a string in Arabic or in Cyrillic or in whatever and say that word or that series of letters or symbols in that language denotes the name of the territory. That's it.
Chris.
Not will it work, not will it be acceptable, just it is denoting the name of the territory.
Chris.
If you don't have that, yes, hang on a second, Bart, if you don't have that, then you could have, let's say you didn't have it, then that would mean that anybody could put in anything they like. So
actually, Chris, I see what you're saying. I think the issue is a little deeper than that. It's not that it does not denote the name of the territory. It's that the name of the territory can be denoted four different ways to a computer, and it looks exactly the same way when it's written down.
Sorry, Ram, yes, I understand that, but that's not the question that we're dealing with right now. The question we're dealing with right now is the string that the territory wants meaningful as the name of the territory? In other words, it's exactly the same as saying, currently, RS denotes Serbia.
If I can intrude
here. Can I just stop you for one second, because Bart needed to say something, Bart.
So, in other discussions, what came about is we're talking about the string in a certain language in a certain script, and I think what we haven't discussed and what's not in the paper, but I think is implied that both the string should be submitted as well as the the Unicode form of it.
Of course, but we're nowhere near getting down to that level of.
No, but this is where the confusion starts, because if you just say what Gary said, and if I understand Ram correctly, is if you have a proposal for the name or a meaningful string in a certain script, then you're talking on the level of the language, and their concerns is on the level of the Unicode.
Right.
And if both are, and because you have certain choices, if both are not submitted, it becomes unclear which XN dash code the applicant wants.
I think that's exactly right.
How are you going to communicate this? I'm going to put this in very mechanical terms, but I don't mean it as simple to be trivial. How are you going to communicate, as an example, any of the strings we're talking about? So if you're going to even write the paper and send it around, how are you going to write down the string that we're we're talking about.
What's that got to do with whether or not, in principle, there should be a linguistic committee that looks at whether the string meaningfully denotes the territory?
Which there's is no, way, for the, to talk there's about. No way to communicate the string that you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about the string. We're very specifically talking about the choice of. I can only say this in specific terms. What we're talking about is Saudi Arabia, to use an example because we know what they want, saying we want Saudi in Arabic letters, Arabic characters. Does that, here's what it looks like, here's what it is, does that denote the name of our territory, which is Saudi Arabia?
And the Arabic characters you're talking about are which
Arabic characters? No, hang on. Alternatively, if they came along and they said, what we actually want is Arabia, does that denote the name? The answer to which would be no.
I think we all understand your point that the level of human readability.
That's all we're talking about, right? That's all we're talking about.
Right.
That is it.
But the next question is.
But we're not at the next question yet.
But no. It's an intimate part of that. If they, you can say, from a human readability point of view, this is or is not. Acceptable, and if it is acceptable, then the question is how do you communicate which string it is that you've just agreed to, because
yes.
It may be a whole family of strings.
I understand that, but purely from the point of view of deciding whether a string is meaningfully denotes the name of the territory, that's all we're talking about. There are two ways of doing that, three ways of doing that. One way of doing it is to say it doesn't matter, they can have whatever they like. The second way of doing it is to have some rules that say it must denote the territory, and here are the rules, and leaving it entirely up to the territory itself to say, yes, we've decided it does that. And the third way is to have a series of rules and have someone confirm that it does in fact denote the territory in circumstances where, can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
In circumstances where the list, say an existing name is not provided on a list. Everything else is all extremely important, but not in the context of this discussion.
How is the committee going to express?
I'm not wishing it away.
How is it going to send you the yes message, Chris?
I don't understand your question.
I apologize for putting this in ultra mechanical terms, but the committee meets in a room, and then it has to send you or send somebody a message saying yes.
Yeah.
What is the means by which it does that? I know this sounds like a really silly question, but does it type it on an ASCII keyboard?
Does it type what on an ASCII keyboard? The word yes?
No. The string that it has agreed to, or turn it around. What I want to know is how are you going to communicate that string? What is the mechanical method of documenting the string that everybody has just agreed to does not cause a problem?
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't actually I still don't really understand the question.
Well, that's where we are.
Giannis?
I'm looking to this question from board's perspective. So
yes.
Ultimately, that will be board who will need to take a decision whether to put the string in the root or not. So to my knowledge today, there is not a single person on the board who understands Arabic or reads Arabic script, whatever language. So they certainly need somebody who says, whom they rely on and who says, yes, this is correct. And this, what is written on the paper in Arabic characters, means in English that, and so that, based on that, board will take decision. Equally, board needs to get somebody's competent advice whether what is written in Arabic on the paper can be put in machine in a way that machine reads it in exactly the same unique way.
Yeah.
So, and again, this is another committee which advises board that whatever is written on the paper, whatever is written in the application of a country X, is in full conformity and may So this is my understanding on this, and of course we can I think whatever we do, we need to understand that all the system needs to facilitate board decisions.
Yeah. I think that's right, Yanis, and I think also maybe I've misunderstood, but it seems to me that a lot of the things that we're if you go back to the GNSO recommendations in respect to IDMs, this stuff is not covered in their recommendations. This stuff is to do with logistics and how everything needs to be packaged together to make sure that it works properly. I'm trying to what I thought we were trying to do was to come up with a series of high-level recommendations. And whilst I'm more than happy to accept that it's critically important that the string is defined properly and referenced properly back to Unicode, etc., none of that has anything whatsoever to do with the principle of whether there should be a committee of linguistic experts that answers a very straightforward question. I'm getting the impression from Carrie and Steve and Ram and others that maybe the question isn't as straightforward as I think it is. That may very well be true. But that doesn't alter the overarching question of whether there should in fact be a linguistic committee or not. And if there isn't one, then what does that mean? We could spend hours discussing the way in which the message needs to be delivered, and I accept unreservedly that needs to be done. But right now, this particular area, should there be a language committee or a committee of linguistic experts, is one of a very small number of areas on which this working group has not yet reached consensus. And that's what we need to be talking about, is to whether the principle of having a group, confirm that a string is meaningful based on our definition is acceptable or not. I know it's difficult for some people to actually deal with looking at it just in that simplistic way, but if we don't answer that question, we're not going to get anywhere. And
Chris, equally, if you don't, this is Ram, equally, if you don't address the patient question, you're also not going to get anywhere.
What representation question?
The question that Steve Crocker was talking about, how do you represent that string that the language committee is going to decide?
I have no idea. It may not be necessary. It may not be necessary to represent the string. Because if we don't get to a point where we know that there's going to be a fast track, and if we don't get to the point where we know what the basis of that's going to be, how you represent the string is completely irrelevant. We need some pegs in the ground first.
Oh, I understand that. What I'm saying is that the terms of for a language committee to do its job right,
we're
its terms of reference
terms,
have
Ram.
To be...
No, we're not drafting terms. We're talking about the principle.
Chris, hang on. Let me finish. For the language committee to do its job right and to actually provide some real guidance on whether a string is meaningful and represents correctly, I think it's important for us to understand and agree whether it's actually set up to look at the string in the right way.
Let me offer up maybe a constructive thought here. I think the point that Chris is making is a necessary but not sufficient part of the answer. That is, if the language experts cannot agree that a string is a let's just think of it visually, written down on paper with pen, is an okay representation for a country, then that brings things to a halt. But the positive answer that, yes, this is okay, is not the end of the discussion. It is sufficient step. It would then have to be followed by whether or not there is an agreed upon unambiguous representation for that string. And I gather, Chris, from the approach that you're taking, that you want to divide these two questions and focus on getting agreement on the first. And I think that the response that you're hearing is implicitly a concern that that would be taken as a sufficient answer, and the pushback that you're getting is, no, there is an important inescapable additional question that would have to be dealt with.
Okay, but I understand that. So let me, then I understand that. Hang on a second. This is, who was that?
Manal,
you're cutting out.
Yes, actually, I can't hear you also very well, but if you can hear me, can I make an intervention here?
Yes, go ahead, Manal.
Okay, I was just wondering if this is an issue for the fast track, because, I mean, the linguistic committee is going to say that this, to confirm at least that this is one of the forms that denotes the country name. It's not going to list all the variants or all the variable forms. I think this is more of the PET solution, which is going to look to the whole thing and then apply whatever that has to do with the variants and the variant table and so on.
Yeah.
But I think it's very unlikely that we have two countries asking for the same thing at this point in time in the first track for non-consensus string.
Thank you, Minister. I think that's true. And if I could just pick up on a point. Sorry, was there somebody else trying to talk then? Okay. So I could just pick up on what Steve just said. Steve, perhaps you can answer this question for me. If you go to one of the two tables that we refer to currently in the document, in either of those tables there is a representation of Saudi Arabia, long form name and short form name.
In the UN table.
In the UN table or in the ISO table, one or the other, it doesn't matter.
It's the UN table.
So that is a representation of, that is Saudi Arabia written in long form and short form in Arabic. If the application, if the request for delegation for an IDNCC TLD to Saudi Arabia is either one of those two, purely from a linguistic point of view, purely from whether that represents the territory or not, then that's a given because it's in the UN table. It therefore represents the territory, full stop, end of story. Now, what happens in respect to Unicode, what happens in respect to how those characters are represented, or if they could possibly be more than one character, or how they're represented in Unicode, is an entirely separate question from whether that Arabic word in that script actually means Saudi Arabia. And that's what we're talking about.
Well, just to reiterate, you're implicitly suggesting that there's a way to communicate these agreements and to have this discussion among the language community that is sort of above the level of choosing what characters to type these names in. And so the mental image that I get when I listen to where you're going is that this happened somewhere where people write on a board or they're writing on paper. And
right. If it's in the table, it's in the table. What's the problem?
Well, the problem
is... Let's start at that point. It's in the table.
It's all over the table. There's multiple ways to represent the same name, and they would look visually the same.
Right. So what you're saying is that I could... What you're saying is that the site of this name quite clearly means Saudi Arabia, but I could type it in three or four different ways.
Right.
Okay. But that's the second point. The first point is, does it say Saudi Arabia? How it says Saudi Arabia is a different issue.
Well, I think we're in agreement on all of this, and the question is whether a positive answer from the language committee as I said, is dispositive for whether there are subsequent and non-trivial questions about what variants are going to be used.
But my understanding, yes, and if I'm wrong about this, then no doubt you will tell me. But in my mind, and maybe it's just in my mind, the first question is, does it denote the territory? Everything else after that becomes a technical question, which is what keystrokes do you use? How does it translate into XN dash dash? What are the Unicode code points? And does it work? Those are all technical points.
And the response you're getting from us is basically agreement on what you're saying, with the strong additional sort of overtone that it shouldn't be presumed that the first agreement is going to necessarily lead to a rather fast or trivial answer through the second part of that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
What would happen if we stopped talking about the qualifying name of the committee and consider in what situations we're likely to require expert advice? Having a committee that serves no purpose other than to confirm that something that's likely already on a UN list is in fact on the UN list seems to be rather pointless.
No, Terry, it's only if it's not on the UN list. There are circumstances in which the name that the territory would... The string that the territory would like does denote the name of the territory, but is not on that list. And
I'm sorry, Suzanne. Yes. Could I just check? For purposes of fast track, is there possibly a solution that says there will be no fast track processing of an application or anything that isn't on that list?
Suzanne, that would be absolutely wonderful if it wasn't for the fact that that list only includes, to take India as an example, one language apart from English. So if you allow for the possibility of a country like India having official languages numbering 22, and if you allow for the fact that because they are official languages, both in our definition in our suggested paper and in just general definition because they're constitutionally defined as official, the names of those, the name of India in most of those languages does not appear in the tables.
But what happens then when the government of India says these are the 22 representations of the name of our country that we wish to have included in this process? How do we tell the government of India that we're going to be submitting their judgment to external review and we'll get back to them?
Well, the suggestion, no one is suggesting, it all depends on how you say it, but basically what we're currently suggesting, and it's only a suggestion, is that a group of experts should be asked to simply confirm that the name does denote the name of the territory. I personally don't see a problem with that. I understand that from a government point of view, that might be challenging. My question is, what's the alternative? Because it seems to me that the alternative is that you just say, if the territory says this is what we want, then this is what they get. And I think that that's problematic. However, if the general consensus is it's not problematic, then it's not problematic.
Actually, where I'm going with this is not so much to assess whether it is problematic in itself, but whether a committee constituted on the basis of linguistic expertise is the correct venue for dealing with it.
Well, how else are you going to deal with it?
I would see an awful lot of political intricacy in that discussion myself, and we do get back to where I was actually trying not to get back to. The output of that committee is going to have to be submitted as a sequence of Unicode code points to somebody who decides which of the multiple alternate ways of representing that name, when it's agreed upon, is going to be put forward into a request for entry into the route.
In the same way that a territory, if you go through the steps set out in the current methodology, the territory needs to be ready, and the territory needs to be able to come to the party, so to speak, with a string that it thinks is linguistically represents the territory and technically works. So the intention would be that to take a very simple example, that Russia would come along and would basically say, look, this is what we want. This is the Unicode version of what we want. I'll use Russia because as far as I know there's only one. This is the Unicode XN dash dash thing of what we want. Now, the technical committee can have a look at that, and the linguistic committee can have a look at it if they need to. And
come on,
once that's cleared, tick, away we go. I can understand completely why, from a political point of view, having some sort of linguistic committee might be challenging. What I can't understand is why it seems to be an issue from a technical point of view. If you've got a technical committee that's going to be looking at everything from a whether it works or it doesn't work, which Unicode code points are being suggested, etc., etc.
But that's not what the... Chris, I'm sorry, this is Ram.
Yes.
That's actually not what the technical committee... unless we ask them to do that, that is not what they'd be doing.
What would they be doing?
Chris, they'll be checking whether the form works or not. And the problem here is all of these forms are valid and would work. All of these forms are meaningful. All of these forms represent the country's name.
Yes,
what I'm saying, Chris, is that if you pass that job to the technical committee, the technical committee is likely to come back and say, this is a linguistic issue, pass it on to the linguistic committee. That's the problem that I'm trying to, you know,
raise the attention. No, Ram, I don't understand. If I put in an application, let's call it I know the word application is challenging, but let's call it an application. If I put in an application for .rf in Cyrillic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this is .rf represent. It denotes the territory because it in Cyrillic because it means Russian. It's an abbreviation of Russian Federation in Cyrillic. So that's fine. Tick. This is how it maps to the Unicode. This is how we say it maps to Unicode. Please confirm that you're okay with that. What's the issue? I've told you what it is that I want it to map to. So why is there a problem?
The technical committee is going to look at that application, is going to, you know, review it and say, this works fine. It does not break into the protocols. There is not a security and stability issue. You can go right ahead.
Fine.
The linguistic committee is going to look at this exact same application and say, this is RS, and it's in Cyrillic, and there is not a problem.
Right.
And in the case of Cyrillic, and for the two letters that you've picked, it's possible that there is not another way to represent R and S.
Why does it matter if there is another way to represent it, if I've chosen to represent it this way?
Because if on the side of a bus, when that TLD is represented and someone types in the other string,
it won't work.
You have a problem.
No, you don't have the problem. It just won't work.
And that's not a problem.
That is a problem.
Someone writes in, CCOM on the side of a bus, Chris, and you just happen to type it wrong and it doesn't work, it's not a problem? I think it's a problem. I think it's an issue.
Hold on, let's hold that thought for a second. Sorry, who was trying to speak?
Yeah, I'm here. I think it's for the individual CCs to decide whether, and the CCs will be the ones that will be most familiar with whatever different ways of representing their country code there is in their language. And so if they select one and they're fine with it, I think that should just stand if there are no technical and linguistic problems.
What happened to the global internet?
Well, hold on. How's this being dealt with in... Well, the global internet's truly global right now if you happen to speak in a language that uses ASCII. If you don't, What's happening on the GTLD side of things with IDNs? What's being done on that side to deal with this issue? Anyone?
Yeah, there's an assumption that individual applications are going to be submitted on the basis of a process that has yet to be drafted, which is going to have to address every single one of the details we're talking about right now. There's no discussion about somehow finding a way to short-circuit that process, and we're looking at an intricate set of interlocking issues, and I personally, from the G perspective, don't see how they are going to prove amenable to this sort of reduction to simplicity.
As you know, Chris, that after ICANN does its review of, you know, the similarity of names, and we're not dealing with it being a well-formed representation, that's not a question that's asked in that process. It's then going out for, you know, a public comment where anyone that says, wait a second, that is similar, that is problematic, gets to raise a flag, and that's reviewed. Going back to this discussion that we're having, I guess I'm having trouble understanding a problem. In other words, if we're following the new notion of the IDN guidelines, the version 2 of those that's approved yet, but that says that people, when they are submitting, and I assume that the CC, IDN CCTLDs are also going to be subject to
absolutely
the IDN guidelines. The fifth one there says that one is submitting several forms of it. Now, it doesn't quite translate because it translates Unicode and ASCII encoded representation, but aren't people in this fast track going to be submitting at the same time both a legitimate Unicode and a representation of what that looks like?
Yeah.
And if those two are correct, coming at the same time, I'm not sure, because I'm almost hearing like, well, there's like a loop in terms of, well, we said it looked this way, then something else came up with a Unicode, and now we have to go back to linguistic to make sure that it's still a proper visual representation. But if they're submitting both at the same time, I still see the reason for the linguistic committee, simply because there's no one outside of a linguistic committee that can look at it and say, yeah, it's the proper, you know, meets the requirements that have been set for fast tracks of being a well-formed representation of that country's legitimate name. Okay. And so check, that's done, because ICANN can't do it. ICANN doesn't have linguistic experts to know that what was submitted is indeed what the rules say. And then B, the technical people say, yeah, that's Unicode. That works in the root, yep. You know, that satisfies all the IDN and all the DNS requirements. So I guess I'm confused. I don't understand the problem.
Hi.
Yanam here again?
Yes, Yanam.
I just would like to point out that, emphasize again, that we're not talking about an infinite number of GTLDs, but we're talking about a finite number of relatively small number of CCTLDs that represent the name of the country. And if the country themselves have selected a name and it has been checked and said to be okay, I don't see why we would need any other extra checkpoint for this.
Yeah. Can I
may I respond to that?
Sure. Go ahead.
Thanks. And I'm actually hoping that Manal can help. It's possible, for instance, that a country checks that the meaningful representation in the Arabic language is correct and submits the application, and everything is perfectly correct in that area. However, it's entirely possible that that exact same representation, it looks exactly the same way in the Farsi language.
Yeah.
You need a linguistic committee that can actually look at that and say...
Why does it matter?
Because if somebody, if the string is approved in the Arabic language,
yeah,
and that string is then typed in Farsi, is going to break. It's not going to work at all. Even though it looks like it works, it does not work.
Yeah, it's not going to work in the same way. In the same way, right now, that you can only type in ASCII. I mean, why does it matter that it doesn't work?
Right.
Chris, that's the equivalent of saying that. But hang on. That's the equivalent of saying if you typed in COM in uppercase and it stopped working, that is okay.
No.
Because
not at all.
Approved COM in lowercase, but that's the equivalent of it.
Rob, can I add one more question? Thank you. Even if the on surface the Arabic script looked the same as the Farsi, the Arabic script is not going to be used by people using the Farsi language, and so since this is an Arabic script to denote an Arabic country. It is not going to be, is not going to be Farsi.
Excuse me, the Unicode code chart does not distinguish between these two. There is Arabic script, that's it.
Yes, and the problem is that, you understand, and this is we had a huge discussion about this, there was a huge discussion about this in Dubai, and unless I misunderstood, the push from the Saudis and the Emiratis and various others was that they were comfortable to go with language specific, because if we don't, then if we have to wait for what amounts to a unified table for any language that uses the Arabic, that's the alternative, as I understand it, is we wait for a unified table of every language that uses the Arabic script. Now I ask again the question, if you've got a circumstance where Saudi Arabia has .Saudi in Arabic, what is the problem? If it's conceivable that someone who uses Farsi would look at that, what's the problem?
Manal,
hold on a second. Hang on a second, Manal. We've got several people who want to talk. So Manal, I've got you, then I've got Avery, and anyone else after that. So Manal, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, just quickly responding to Ron's question. Yes, there are confusingly similar characters, but I don't envision this problem within the past text. You see, within the CCTLDs, I don't see how can another country apply for a confusingly similar thing with one that is the name of another country? It's very unlikely that this case would see the case in the first place. Does this answer your question?
Actually, it's an orthogonal question. I was stating something else, which is that it's not another country applying for the same name of another country, Manal. It's that the same name looking or being able to be represented in multiple ways, because it's not a language issue, it's a script issue. So that was all I was talking about. It's not about two countries applying for the same name. I think that is quite in the example of Arabic, that's quite unlikely, but it's much more about the name of a particular country that is requested to be allocated in the Arabic language, and no consideration or not enough consideration being given for how it is going to be represented or how it looks the same way in, say, Farsi or in Pashto or some other language.
But again, Ram, I go back to what I said before. And then certainly I think I may not be directly quoting, but Abdulaziz said, the Saudi Arabian gentleman in Dubai said, we want our IDN CCTLD based on our language, and we'll worry about the script later. So I'm not suggesting he's right, I'm just saying that's what he said. So I'm not clear if the territory is happy. And we actually said, we talked about this in the room in Dubai and said that this would mean, would it not, that it's possible for somebody using Farsi to type the name in and it would not work. And the answer to that is yes, it wouldn't work. And the response to that was, well, that's fine. We don't mind.
But and actually what's happening, which I think might have helped, might have been the reason why Dr. Al-Zaman said what he said, is that these different language communities have actually gotten together and have discovered what characters do look alike, and they are agreeing on specific rules that say that if it looks similar in one, it'll be blocked in the other. And
yes,
that's how they're addressing the ambiguity. But if that doesn't happen, and if you have a territory that applies for it and it goes to a language committee, my fear is that the language committee may not know enough and may say this is fine.
But that's, because you're assuming that as a matter of principle it should be blocked.
It's not about principle at all. It's about how it looks. It's not about the principle. It's pretty straightforward. It looks the same, but to a computer it is different. And do we care about it or not? I think you're making the case that we don't care about it, and I'm making the case that we ought to care about it, because this is not a GTLD, CCTLD issue. It's about if someone types in a string that looks a certain way and they have a keyboard or some device that allows them to type it into their computer,
yes,
is it legitimate to expect that that string works? And I think the answer that I'm hearing is, if they know what language was applied for and they typed it in, then and only then will it work. And I worry that that has a problem with global interoperability of a new TLD string. That's my concern.
There's another aspect of that, and that is that the domain name system doesn't know anything about language. It cannot convey any intrinsic information about language. If a domain name label happens to be a recognizable dictionary word in a given language, language intent can be inferred. But a TLD string, especially if you're looking at things that, as they currently are, the entire CC world is based on the notion of abbreviation, which is not globally applicable. Not globally applicable in a linguistic sense. How can somebody possibly know what the intended language is? And it's not a reasonable thing to expect.
Sure. And Howard, I accept all of that. My point is that if you look at the way that this has been dealt with in the GTLD policy development process, it's been dealt with by saying it needs to be sorted out. I am not going to. It's not possible for us, within the confines of what we've been asked to do in this working group, to drill down to that level of granularity, to come up with that level of suggested steps, because at the end of the day, it's a territorial matter. It's not a question for us to consider. What we need to consider is, under what basis would it be possible for a CCTLD to get an IDM CCTLD in the fast track? If on top of that, ICANN says all IDMs need to be globally accessible across languages that use the same script, if that's the policy, fine. But right now it isn't. Right now there isn't any policy, and my understanding is that it's not GTLD policy either, because that's not what the DNSO recommended in its policy recommendations to the board, as far as I'm aware. So it's not our job right now to be trying to make a decision about whether it is, as a matter of principle, and to take Arabic as an example, where you have Urdu and Farsi and Arabic using all the same script, whether TLDs need to be cross-pollinatory, if you like, across the languages.
Can I?
Who's that, Hon?
This is Aubrey. No, I wanted to...
Oh, Aubrey, sorry. Aubrey,
yeah.
I apologize.
I think even granting, and I'm not arguing against the notion that the territory picks the string that's meaningful, et cetera, there still seems to be the notion, and I think it's at the level of a principle, and doesn't have to do with GTLDs, that that string should have meaning or should work wherever it can be typed in.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that we're always keeping that as a principle, and as that it may mean something different somewhere else is not the issue that I'm questioning. But are we making sure that that string is globally accessible?
Sure. And I would argue, is this not a question for the IDNA protocols or the IDNA guidelines? Rather than a question
no,
for the
No, it's not.
Why?
They don't address it. Because it's not... If you look at the protocol makes the least amount of choices.
Sure,
not the
so, therefore it, so therefore it's a policy question. Is that it's a policy question then, Ram? If it's not for the IDNA protocols, then it must be a or guidelines. It must be a policy question. Yes.
Chris, I don't know the answer. I can tell you what it's not. It's not a. I don't think we can depend upon the technical, either the in this case here, either the linguistic or the technical community cannot solve it. Both of them may be able to solve it, but it's an and, not an or. And I think as Avery was saying, the stability issue, if you will, that I'm concerned about most is if you can type it in, if it looks a certain way and you can type it in, is it not appropriate that it work? And I'm hearing at least one response coming back saying, why should we care? As long as the committees have said it's okay and the territories have said it's okay, why do we care? And I'm making the case we ought to care because you cannot expect someone in some other territory who sees this TLD, the CCTL, IDN CCTLD, to automatically know what
so
language.
Beyond that, the person from that territory, when they're traveling around the world, needs to be able to access home. So it's more than someone else. It's the multilinguistic people of the world, and it's the people traveling from that territory having a right, I think, to expect that wherever they type in their TLD, it will work and point to the right place.
Yeah,
but it will work. The only circumstance in which it's not going to work is if you're using, I'm going to be very specific here, the only circumstance in which it will not work, if I understand it correctly, is if you happen to be using a computer with a keyboard that is operating in Farsi, but in fact your domain name is in Arabic.
And in fact, you may not know the difference because.
And in fact, yes, you may not know the difference. I understand all that, but that's the only circumstance in which it would not work. So I want to ask a really specific question here: how is this dealt with in the GNSO policy?
This Yanis here with a small comment.
Yes, Yanis.
I think we should not think about people who are speaking different languages and those who, for instance, I'm using Latvian and I have a Latvian script and I clearly can define when my computer is in a Latvian script mode and when it is in Latin script mode. So I think we should not worry about those who will use computers. They'll find their way ahead.
And Chris, this is Bart, there's another element. I don't know, because I'm confused as well, to what extent, say, the one of the elements of the methodology is to submit a language table. That's, I think, one of, let's say, the applicant or the territory will submit a language table before moving forward, and that the string has to be selected from the language table, to what extent that will assist in circumventing all these circumstances people are bringing up.
Yeah. Look, I agree, Bart. I think we... I really do want to move on from this, because otherwise we're not going to get anything on our agenda sorted out at all. I mean, I think all we can do is, the working group, is to take on board the input that we've received about the difference between basing a string on script, and therefore dealing with languages that, that use the same script, and basing a domain name on language. I understand that, and I think the working group can take that on board, and we can discuss that. But I really would like to move on and back to our agenda, because otherwise we're just not going to get anywhere, and we do have some very tight time frames. So unless there are any objections, we need to move on. I need to get, Bart and I need to be, since we're going to be drafting the next version of the document, need to get clear that if the language, the Linguistic Experts Committee's role is very, very specifically different. Well, no, let me start again. A couple of people that I've spoken to who originally had issues with the way the language committee clauses were drafted have said that if it's redrafted to limit the role of the committee to simply be confirming that the string is meaningful within the definition that we've got in circumstances where it is not listed in one of those lists, and that if there is a question about its meaningfulness, that would be dealt with by the committee entering into discussions with the quote, applicant, unquote. That would be more acceptable. And I get the impression from Heather, without wishing to tie her to anything, that may also be slightly more acceptable than the previous wording. So what I'm going to...
Heather, I really hesitate.
So what would be your alternative, Heather?
Well, I did describe what I thought would be an alternative, and I think there is a principled challenge with having a language committee.
Which effectively means that, does it not, that it's entirely up to the territory?
Yes.
And that would then mean effectively that the territory could have whatever it decided was meaningful.
Yes.
Which would mean that Macedonia could have Macedonia.
Right.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying I have the answers, but I think that what we're talking about is really kind of a fundamental point. And I know that from the point of view of governments, and a few others have expressed this, that this is what we're struggling with. So,
why is it acceptable for a technical committee to check something, but not for a linguistic committee?
Because you're talking about language and you're talking about culture.
Right.
And I think those issues are more sensitive, perhaps.
I think, if I may, I think Heather is quite correct. And if I were to use your example, Chris, of India, and I'm not going to speak for the Indian government, far be it for me to do that, but the GAC would certainly be sympathetic if the government of India said that it intended to develop its list of the name India in all of the languages slash it considers official.
Hmm.
That is its job.
And what would you...
Nobody's job in the world to decide what India looks like in any of their languages.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's, I think, where governments, certainly around the GAC table to date, have been coming from. It's very unclear as to why there would be a need to go to some as yet unidentified, undefined collection of people that would then tell that country that because you're not on this list or that list, and admittedly what we could try to do is identify how many of those circumstances are likely to arise? Is it only India? Is it also .eu in Bulgarian? I mean, I don't know.
Well, you've got. It's a really interesting question, but you can't. I don't think we can make a fast track with a series of steps based on. It's okay for us to do it this way because there'll only be one or two that will be problematic. And I think it's also important to remember that this is not the full-blown policy. This is a fast track. I mean, look, fundamentally, the easiest way of doing this is really simple. The easiest way of doing it is to say, unless your language is on that list, is on the UN list or the ISO list, and unless you're applying for the long form or the short form name, you're not in the fast track. That would be a really, really simple way of doing it, and it would be acceptable to governments generally on the basis that it's a UN list, so therefore what's the problem? But we've been told that that's not acceptable because India specifically and a number of other territories would find it almost impossible to deal with the fact that a number of their languages are not listed in either of those tables, or for that matter in any table, and that's fine. So the purpose of structuring it in the way that we've currently structured it, bearing in mind that this is for a fast track, the intention of a fast track was not to give every territory an IDN CCTLD as soon as possible. The purpose of the fast track was to give those territories that had a pressing need for one as soon as possible. So different rules apply, and whilst I'm more than happy to accept that in general terms it would be a complete nonsense for ICANN or anyone else for that matter to be suggesting that someone else should tell a territory what the representation of their territory is, what we have is a circumstance where we currently have no policy and we have nothing to sheet back to. And if we have nothing to sheet back to, then surely by simply saying, yes, it must denote the name of the territory, but the territory can decide, that is effectively a free-for-all. And the problem with a free-for-all is that we haven't decided yet whether that's acceptable. I can't see the point of elegantly describing the need for a CCTLD to be meaningful and writing it down and saying, and here's some examples and here's a list and here's what meaningful means, on the one hand, on the other hand saying, but if the territory decides that this is what's meaningful, then that's an end to the matter. Because it might not be. And what do you do then? Or do you just say, that won't happen?
Chris?
Yes.
I think based on the input we've got, let's sit down and try to recast the wording and see where we get from there, because I think we need to get on to the next point.
Fine. I agree. Unless anyone has anything else to add or to say about what we've talked about so far. Okay, fine. So, the next point is an objection procedure. This is Edmund's point about there being a right for non-territorial objection. This has been brought up many times. I guess we need to deal with it, discuss it, or close it down, one or the other. Does anybody want to speak in favour of there being an independent objection process?
Mr. Favre, unfortunately, Edmund is not here, so perhaps I'll say a little bit even out of the observer position. Basically, what has been said, and I think mostly is accepted, although there may be issues with it, is that the territory gets to decide on its own name. And, for example, if it were to decide that, for example, .museum written in its own script was a reasonable representation of its name, that would be okay. No other country has the right to object. But now, would someone else have a right to raise an issue and say, wait a second, we understand that the territory has said that .com in this script is their name, but can we question it? Or is it that, no, there is no questioning, and I know that it's not likely to happen, although spending several years working with ICANN has taught me that anything that might happen does happen. So I understand that's a personal belief. So I guess the absence of the external world being able to raise a flag and say something is being done here that we would like to question, and without defining how that questioning is done or processed, whether it's a board, an external committee, you know, you take it to the UN, I mean, I don't know, but whether there is any right for anyone to raise a question. And that's the objection process that says,
yep,
there is an issue. Please, someone look at this issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hi, this is Hiro.
Yes, Hiro.
Yes. I think the relevant objection can come from language aspects rather than domain and expert aspects. So I cannot think of other kinds of objections than those from language experts. I think it's already agreed locally and assessed by a technical committee. This means we don't need, from my opinion, we don't need an objection procedure beside the technical and possibly a language experts assessment. This is
Could I get some... Sorry, who was that?
Manal.
Go ahead, Manal.
This is Manal. I just want to support the idea that I don't see a point of an objection procedure for non-consensus means very straightforward, should be very straightforward. So especially if the government gets to agree on the name, the string, everything, the registry, the local community, and the linguistic committee or the linguistic expert and the technical expert, then I don't see a point of getting an agreement from every other single person on the internet.
Okay, anyone else have a view they'd like to put?
Sorry, Chris, this is Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Oh, thank you. I quite understand the idea of objection procedure raised by Edmond, and he said in this email that it could be within the whole process of public consultation. I understand the idea, but it seems that this objection procedure is conflicting with non-contentious nature of fast track. You see, fast track is to implement those CC that is not contentious. If it's been objected, it's become contentious. In that case, it shouldn't be fast-tracked at all. So let's look at this objection more carefully. Is this so what I mean is that if there is objection procedure in place, this means that anybody reads the issue and this is the end of this application. Or we're going to evaluate or assess or judge this objection. And in that case, it will be contentious. So it seems we're going to a circle of logic. So this, I do not agree to add additional layer of evaluation called objection procedure.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I ask a clarifying question? This is Aubrey again. So basically, what we're saying is that if it were to be questioned, that would make it contentious. And since this is only for contentious names, we can't ask the question.
No, I don't think that's right. I think, and I'm not entirely sure that's what Hong said. You either have an objection process or you don't. If you have one, then if you don't have one, then If the string is put forward under the fits under the current IR guidelines, you know, government, manager, community, blah, then it's not contentious within the territory, then it would fit into the fast track. If you have an objection procedure, then you have to figure out who can object and what that would mean. And I think what Hong is saying is if you have an objection procedure, then the mere fact that there is an objection means that it's contentious and therefore it can't be in the fast track.
Okay. Without an objection process, what we're really saying is that any objection falls to the board level.
There's nothing to stop anybody from making a submission to the board, but the way it's currently drafted, if you ignore for the moment the technical committee and the language committee and just...
Which we haven't agreed to, correct?
Yeah, but if you just ignore that for the moment, then it's basically about in territory. If it's non-contentious in the territory, and that is defined within the sort of parameters of the current IANA protocols, which means that basically you've got government consent and you've got manager consent and you've got local internet community buy-in, then that would be deemed to be non-contentious, and that would therefore mean it could go into the fast track. You couldn't, for example, have something in the fast track where, let's just say, for example, that an existing ASCII CCTLD manager puts in a request for delegation of an IDN CCTLD string which meets the linguistic and technical requirements, but there's a government objection or there's a demonstration of the local internet community doesn't believe that it is an acceptable string or stuff like that. But none of that is what Edmund's objection process
right.
is about.
Yeah. Now, his objection process is for the rest of us.
Right.
For the rest of the world to basically look at it and say, raise a question, and it's more a question process than an objection.
Can I ask a stupid question? I'm sorry, Suzanne here.
Yes, Suzanne, go ahead.
Okay, anybody, presumably today, anybody could look at the changes to the ISO 3166 list because a country, you know, changes its name, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Presumably anybody today could say, I don't like ME for Montenegro.
Yes.
What difference does that make? And why should, again, I think whoever made the point, that would be completely inconsistent with the concept of a fast-track procedure.
Yes, it would, Susanna. I think in a nutshell it's this simple. If you do not accept that even having the linguistic veracity of the string confirmed by an independent group of linguistic experts, if that's not acceptable, then quite clearly any form of objection process outside of the territory would be completely unacceptable, because that amounts to an even greater impost on the territorial sovereignty by suggesting that someone else could object. And whether that's another government or whether that's another TLD holder or whatever it might be. So I think the objection process itself, the concept of having an outside objection process itself is probably going to, that I'm assuming here, but doubtless you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be basically unacceptable to most governments on the basis that it's way outside of what is perceived of their sovereignty. Would that be right, Suzanne?
I think probably so. I'm not going to be able to speak for everybody, but I think that's the case.
Can I ask one hypothetical question?
Of course you can.
So, an objection process, even if, and I'm not suggesting that. I am favoring an objection process this limited, but an objection process, even if it was limited only to intergovernmental organizations, would still be problematic in this formulation.
I don't understand why intergovernmental.
But for example, I mean, if we said that, and it's unlikely to happen, I know, but if WIPO, or if UNESCO, or if someone, you know, an intergovernmental treaty-based organization, were to want to object, even that is an unacceptable external breach.
Well, intergovernmental bodies are, their work is directed by their membership. And if it's a treaty-based organization and its membership is government, then those bodies actually don't have an identity other than the one given to them by their members. So I'm not entirely sure I understand why the WIPO would be objecting to a country name. And certainly governments would be able to take that up, or they would know that and deal with it directly. But it's highly unlikely, Aubrey, that any IGO has any standing other than what its members give it.
Yes, no, I totally understand that. I was just trying to understand the scope of where the borders are on this. Thank you.
Well, I agree, and that's a good question. Yanis, you had something to say.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking hypothetically there might be a situation when government and all people in Comoros would come up with a .com in, I don't know, whatever script they're using, local script, saying
yes.
this is something we think would be very appropriate. And then, of course, there is a problem, we know. But if somebody will put forward something like that, then it clearly will be objected already by the board, because for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I think that's right. What about a circumstance where let's move slightly inwards from Avery's line? What about a circumstance where another government objects? My understanding is that would be outside of the GAC principles, because the GAC principles clearly state that no other government has the right to interfere in another government's sovereignty. But I ask the question nonetheless, what about if another government objects?
Chris,
how would we do? Yeah.
Heather speaking. I think someone mentioned earlier, they made a point that if that happens, it's controversial. And if we've established that in the fast track, things must be not controversial, then,
But it's only controversial if you have a process, Heather. If you don't have a process, then for objection, then somebody saying they object to something is just saying they object. And if you're going to say that an objection from another government means it's controversial, then that means, is it just from another government? Or is an objection from a TLD controversial? Another TLD holder acceptable. There's either an objection process or there isn't. If there's an objection process, then you have to define who's allowed to object and what the basis is upon which they can object and what the consequences of that are.
You know, I think if we look back to VISIS and VISIS agreement, then no government would be entitled to object issues related to of other countries.
Exactly.
But the problem is that we are dealing also with territories, and in some cases territories are not sovereign states. And here I see there might be a problem. There might be attempt to contest in generalized thing, but there might be a situation where government of a certain country may contest in name of a territory.
But you can only contest. Yes, I understand that, Yanis, and I accept that's correct. But you can only contest if there is a system in place that allows you to. So currently, if you don't have an objection process, then what that means is that, and let's take Macedonia as an example because it's the easiest example to give. Its name is the former Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, etc. Macedonian Republic, whatever. I've forgotten the name now. But anyway, they presumably could apply for Macedonia in Greek. Now, my question is, are they going to be able to get that? Because if there's no objection process and there's no linguistic committee to say that does not actually denote the territory, because the territory is called whatever it's called, then that means they'll get it, presumably. And is that acceptable in the fast track? Because it's not contentious within the territory.
Now, you see, I mean, when it comes to existing TLBs, it's easy. There is a reference table, and Macedonia is in the reference table, and other territories are in the reference table, and when the ISO standard was accepted, all governments faced fait accompli. Now we don't have a reference table, and there might be situations that somebody may try to contest. And even if there is no objection procedure, which I would favor personally, and I think that my government would not favor objection procedure in general for the fast track, it does not apply for a normal track. So then the government may try to find another way to express its opinion through the board, most probably.
Yes.
Or through the board.
I understand the words. I'm not quite clear what the consequences are.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking about
it. Yeah.
Sorry not to be helpful.
No, that's fine. it's very complicated. Heather?
Yes?
Heather, are you still there?
Yes.
Can I ask you the question? Would you, given that you're against having a language committee.
Objections against the language
committee. What, I assume you'd also be against an objection procedure.
I would have the same fundamental concern as both.
So how would you see it working then? Would you simply sit back and say, well, then that just means that, you know, you get what you get. But, you know, Macedonia gets Macedonia.
Well, excuse me. I think the example you offered was that Macedonia, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, to be quite specific.
Correct, yes.
Could put in a request for its name just as Macedonia in Greek.
Correct.
Now, but the language spoken in the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia is not Greek, actually.
Right.
So on the UN list that is being referred to as one possible source, the name, the long name of the country is written in Cyrillic.
Okay.
So is it not possible that Macedonia could apply for Macedonia in Cyrillic?
Yes, I'm sure that's correct, Suzanne. And I'm sure that would still be offensive and problematic for the Greeks, because it's not the use of the term Macedonia in Greek, it's the use of the term Macedonia at all.
Period. No, I get that.
So my point is, I don't care, quite frankly. I think, let Macedonia have Macedonia. But I'm just using it as an example so that we're clear of what the consequences are of the steps that we consider taking.
No, it's a very good example, and so I appreciate you raising it. I just think these are things that exist, and they're going to happen in a variety of forums.
Well, let me give you. Sorry, carry on.
Well, I just cannot believe that a linguistic committee is going to be able to sort out what is, at the end of the day, a political problem.
No, you see, my point is this: the linguistic committee would be asked a very simple question. Does the name applied for denote the name of the territory? And the answer to that question, I would argue, in the case of the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, is no. The name Macedonia does not denote the territory.
Mm.
Now, whether it's a Cyrillic or Greek or whatever, doesn't much matter. My point is that if we can overcome, it's about getting some sort of flexibility around it so that we can deal with the political problems in a way that means that they don't get into the fast track. if you create a circumstance where there is no mechanism other than a technical mechanism, then effectively anything can get into the fast track, and I think that's challenging.
This is Avery again. If I can, one last thing I wanted to add on this, and then I will really shut up. But one of the reasons that within the GNSO, and not to use that as an example, we created all these somewhat seeming gothic objection procedures and whatever, was on a principle that we followed that perhaps is not one that wants to be followed on the fast track, and if that's a conscious decision, I understand, that we did not want every possible conflict, every possible question and objection to fall on the board's table. We wanted to have some notion of a process that hopefully by the time things got to the board, they would be non-contentious.
Yeah.
Now, if we don't build any of these mechanisms up front, which is a perfectly, you know, understandable thing based on the reasoning that people have heard, one way to go with it, then what we are deciding, or what you are deciding, is that everything that might be of question needs to be questioned at the board level. And if that's what the committee wants to recommend for the fast track, that's possible. But otherwise, I see absolutely no other place to ask a question.
Oh, Chris.
Yeah.
Speaking as somebody who sits on the board, even though I don't get a vote, I would say that at least my mindset would be that fast track should really be that portion of the official procedure which is happens to go through fast because there weren't any objections raised. So that rather than viewing the fast track as a separate track, I view it as a fast path through the process, single integrated process. And if objections come up to the board, then I would think that the board would say, this must not have been a actual fast-track transaction or proposal. Let's throw it back into the queue and let the regular process sort this out.
Open up yourself.
Okay, Steve, I'll come back to you in a second. Sorry, yes, who else wants to speak?
I wanted to tell...
Yeah, hang on, Yanis, hold on a second. Was you Heather or?
Oh, this is Hong.
Oh, Hong. Hello. Sorry. Yes, Hong first, then Yanis.
Oh, okay. What I want to say is that I suggest we return to the beginning part, the starting point, that is non-contentiousness. Just now, Chris clarified that non-contentiousness basically refers to non-contentious within the CCTLD territory. But to my understanding, it should be non-contentious in two aspects, not only within the territory, but also in the international community. If it's going to be objected by another CCTLD territory, by another government, or by another ICO, this is very contentious, and I wonder whether such an application should be fast-tracked.
Hong, the problem is that, Hong, unless there is an objection process in place, it doesn't matter what another government says or another TLD holder says. If there is no objection process in place, then they can kick and scream as much as they like. The question is whether there should be an objection process, not what happens if there is an objection. If there is no objection process, then no one can object. And the GAC principles quite clearly, and the WISPIS principles, I think, quite clearly state that no other government should interfere they don't specifically say with the CCTLD, but effectively with the CCTLD of another territory. Yanis, you had something.
Yeah, no, first of all, before I'm making points about Macedonia, I want to tell you that after 8 minutes, I will ask all GAC members leave this conference call and join the GAC conference call.
Right.
So, a point about Macedonia. There is a split in the international community, and there are many countries which accept and de facto use name of Macedonia in official correspondence on the in the level of heads of state. So at the same time, there is a basically one or few countries who do not recognize Macedonia, and in the case where they have a veto right, they veto decisions based on the name of the country. So therefore, in this case, we made a clear distinction in this decision that there should not be any interference, and one could argue that this is interference. Technically, there would be one. So that's simply a clarification for on Macedonia.
Thanks. Okay. I think I get the general impression that some sort of external objection procedure is not meeting with acceptance, but I think we're going to need to send a note out. Well, we'll need to send a note out to the list to make sure that I'm right about that.
Yeah, right. Probably what we need to do is put the arguments we've heard, say, list them, so everybody's aware where we're heading.
That's right. I'm not going to open up a discussion right now on the third item on the agenda, which was to discuss agreements between CCTLD nodes and ICANN for several reasons. One, because it's late. Two, because the GAC people are going to leave shortly. And three, because it's going to be far too long a discussion, and we'll do that on the next call. I think we're going to need to have another call probably sooner rather than later, but...
Yep.
I know Edmund has a series of other points, but I'm minded to close the call down right now and maybe set a date for another one on the email list in the next day or so that people can get ready for another call in a week or so. And that will let the GAC people go to their call. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
I'll take that as a yes.
That's more a point of scheduling. That's to do with the meeting on the, I think it's the 12th May, Geneva.
We'll send that out on the list, but...
A reminder, okay.
Yeah, we'll send it out on the list. Okay. We'll close the call down now. Bart, are you at home?
No, I'm in Brussels.
Okay. Can you call me back?
I will.
Okay. Bye.
Yes, bye.
Thanks, everybody.
So thanks.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.